Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On track one, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, current research data, and his clinical experience. On track two, he will be joined by Tracy Hawley on He Said, She Said, for her female focus on topics related to whole food, health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track three features an interview with our special guest, who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 7, Number 10. Last month, I concluded my review of the three most important lifting exercises in the gym, the squat, the deadlift, and the bench press. In addition to listening to these tutorials through SNU, you can now log on to YouTube.com. That's YouTube, YouTube.com, and watch me perform these exercises with some narration. I've been getting into movie making, and I'm going to be submitting dozens and hopefully hundreds of different videos on YouTube. It's great. I really enjoy it. It's very creative. Once you're on the YouTube website, enter Corey Hawley as two separate words into the box at the top. Choose videos. It's usually there by default. And then click search. A range of videos that I produced will come up for you to view. And of course, the ones I'm referring to now are titled deadlift, squat, bench press, and so forth. In this tutorial, I'd like to discuss the benefits of aerobic exercise and high-intensity training. Cardiovascular health, which is incredibly important, relates to the heart, blood vessels, circulation, and lung capacity. The strength of your heart, circulatory blood flow, exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide within the lungs, and artery elasticity determine a large percentage of your overall health. In North America, many people suffer with disability or die prematurely as a direct result of damage to their hearts and arteries. And believe me, we've only got one heart and a very intricate set of arteries. We've got to learn to protect them because you're only as young or old as your heart and arteries. Heart disease is definitely a leading cause of mortality, and much of it can be prevented with optimum nutrition and physical conditioning. Diabetes, cancer, and lung diseases such as emphysema, bronchitis, and asthma all have a connection with heart and lung efficiency. The bottom line is if you do not maintain excellent cardiovascular health, you become much more vulnerable to heart and lung disease and tissue degeneration, and therefore more susceptible to a host of killer diseases and chronic illness. Aerobic activity includes running, swimming, skipping, rowing, inline skating, dancing, any form of exercise or physical activity that involves continuous movement and therefore increased oxygen consumption. When you breathe at an accelerated rate to meet the demands of aerobic activity, you challenge the ability of the body to produce energy and supply nutrients and oxygen to various working parts of the body. At the same time, you force the eliminative channels, including the bowels, skin, lungs, and kidneys, to excrete toxins that interfere with optimum function and energy production. And isn't it true how sitting around actually promotes the pooling of waste and toxins and contaminants from the refined food that people eat and from the toxic environment that they're living in? So sitting around, it's like a pool of water that has no lead out or lead in, and it becomes stagnant, and there are parasites and microorganisms and all kinds of vicious beasts that are invisible to the eye that become laden in that water and makes it toxic to consume. So the same thing relates to our body. We're mostly water. And again, the solution to pollution is dilution. So we've got to move the body, we've got to hydrate the body, and then eat clean food, and then there will be no buildup of toxic waste, and then, of course, a lot of the disease pathologies that people experience will never be present. And I have all the belief and faith in that, and that's why we do what we do. Inactivity allows waste and morbid matter to accumulate inside the body, leading to what is called auto-intoxication, and poisons the actual cells, tissues, and organs. Once the blood is contaminated, the process of disease begins revealing itself through the weakest link of the body, and everyone has a weak link. And you're only as strong as your weakest link. So the trick is to protect your weak link and build up your defenses around it. Build up a castle, a wall, a fortitude around your weak link. Make your weak link your strong point, and then your entire body becomes more resilient and resistant to disease. Emphasis on cardio brings balance to your weight training program. Not enough guys that are pumping iron are doing any cardio. They leave it, they shelf it, they are not interested in it, but they'll suffer as a consequence because their heart and lung capacity will diminish over time, and they'll become prone to disease even when they're weight training, although weight training does have some cardiovascular value, there's no doubt. If your respiratory system performs more efficiently, which it will when you're training, doing cardio on a regular basis, then you will be able to train harder, recover faster, and grow stronger. You'll have a lot more endurance in your day-to-day activity. Many athletes like to train with weights on different days than when they run, swim, cycle, or practice their sport. I like to use the treadmill after I weight train on the same day. I love interval training, patterns of 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute, 30 second. Intervals means I take a rest between the segment of running time, whether it's 5, 2, or 1 minute, and vary that throughout the week. And that gives me a wide variety of cardiovascular benefits because different capacities of intensity relate to a different draw on energy and different muscle fiber types being utilized. A minimum of 2 to 3 cardio workouts per week is recommended to maintain optimum cardiovascular health. Individuals on a weight gain program should reduce each cardio session to a maximum of 12 minutes and exercise faster and harder. Interval training is probably the best way to go, especially for hard gainers. No cardio at all is not the answer, but it is easy to overdo cardio training and aerobic exercise. And when you do that, you'll increase oxidative stress to the point where it prevents growth. So you've got to find that delicate balance. Those who need to lose body fat should train aerobically, absolutely, on a regular basis, but too many are training longer at a moderate pace instead of taking advantage of interval training. A lot of women also walk in the gym. I see guys doing this too, and they go right onto the treadmill or the elliptical machine. Wrong. Unless it's just a warm-up to get ready for the weight training. You warm up, you hit the weights, which is anaerobic, which depletes glycogen, and then you get on that cardio machine, and that's when you're going to lose the body fat more efficiently and more quickly. Remember the rule, however, that relates to the motive behind exercise. You should never train specifically to lose weight. In other words, you don't go into the gym to lose weight. You train to improve physical fitness. Body fat and body composition is related to energy expenditure, obviously, but by far more important to success is paying attention to the diet and learning how to feed your body genetically, a compatible diet that is well suited for your genome. There is a great research paper by Dr. Mark Smith that discusses the superior health and performance benefits of high-intensity intermittent exercise over low to moderate-intensity continuous exercise. Interval training refers to intermittent exercise involving periods of exercise followed by periods of recovery, which enables anyone to increase the intensity of the exercise workload. Dr. Smith does not argue that endurance athletes do not need to do volume training. However, he does argue that endurance athletes, while extremely impressive in their physical accomplishments, are not the healthier athletes compared to sprinters. Further, while the endurance athlete has a need to maintain a high submaximal intensity for long periods to be successful, the vast majority of athletes, and certainly humans in general, have no need for this type of activity. Now, I'd like to discuss some of the advantages of the higher intensity interval training approach to the long-term endurance training model. And I presented a lecture in American Fork in Utah before we arrived in Nevada, and these are some of the major points. First of all, let's focus on quality, not quantity. That rule applies to training. It applies to cardio. Just because you put in 20 or 40 or half an hour or an hour of running does not mean that the running event was good. If you're basing your marriage on time alone, you've been married for 50 years, how many times have I heard that? But you got a crappy marriage, no communication, and you don't get along, and you bitch and complain, and you hate each other, but you stay in it for what? The kids, religion, social obligation, whatever. That does not mean you have a successful marriage, just because you've been married for 20 or 40 or 100 years. So let's translate this also to training. Just because you're training for 5 hours in the gym every day does not mean that you're having the best or most efficient workout. Greater performance in less time. Well, that's the advantage. When you cut back on the time, you elevate the intensity, which means that you're going to perform at a higher level. So sprinting 50 meters or 100 meters is going to give you cardiovascular values that are impossible to achieve when you run at a moderate pace for a longer period of time. The research by Dr. Smith, and this paper you can read, if you go to articles on CoreyHawley.com, and we now have a new section for guest articles, check out that research paper because it's very important for you to read to get the science and the goods. But your cardiovascular health will be better than compared to the moderate long-term approach. Body composition and fat loss. Well, how important is that for a lot of people? And remember that the higher intensity will do more to reduce body fat because of the growth hormone release and because of the influence on testosterone than this long-term running. The voluminous moderate approach is easier. That's why a lot of people do it. Plus, they've been programmed and seduced by the fitness industry to think that that's the best way to go, and it's simply not true. Now, the vast majority of sports are interval-based. Think of soccer and hockey and football. It's not like running a marathon. You go fast and quick, and then you stop, you get out of breath, you hop on the bench, and then you let someone else get out there. So it's true that in the vast majority of sports, you don't need to be able to run a marathon. You need to be able to go fast and hard for a short period of time, and because you can deliver more quality of performance that way. Now, when you watch children under free-range conditions, you'll notice that they do the same thing. They'll go hard and stop, hard and stop. They won't run constantly for 2 hours. They'll sit down, and when you study hunting-gathering societies, they do the same thing. They'll sneak up on their prey, moving not at a fast run, but at a moderate pace, conserving their energy, and then when they see their game or their prey, they'll move quickly, move super fast. And this is just like interval training. So interval training is very much like our ancestral genetic program, just like the foods that we need to eat. I think that the high-intensity intermittent training, the interval training, mimics our hunting-gathering ancestors and is tied into optimum function. The body adapts to the stress of this kind of exercise during the rest. So you go hard, and then you have a break, and then your body is adapting. Your body is recovering, and this is very good for the immune system, fantastic for skeletal function. Now, another myth is that this type of training is dangerous for seniors and older people, but in fact, they don't have the capacity when they go all out to run that fast because they're not well conditioned. And Dr. Smith has shown that the risk is about 1 in 1.5 million to actually have a cardiac event. So it's right up there with dying in a plane crash or being eaten by a shark. The fact is that intermittent high-intensity training is better for seniors and non-conditioned folk to to get in shape faster who are all complaining about not having enough time to work out. Then, of course, there's a connection between human growth hormone release and the buildup of lactic acid. As lactic acid builds up quickly because of the high intensity, there's more growth hormone released as a correlate. So this is very interesting. If you walk for 5 miles, you'll get no growth hormone released at all. And as we age, we need to maintain our growth hormone release. It's absolutely critical to the immune function and a good solid skeletal frame. Our bones get denser and more solid if we have a continuous growth hormone release. Then, of course, we've got the benefits associated with testosterone and insulin chemistry. And although cortisol is released when you're training hard and sprinting, you also get the improvement with the GH and with the testosterone chemistry and with the buildup of IGF, insulin growth factors. Now, that's what you don't get. You get cortisol releasing when you're running a marathon or a 5 or 10K, but you're getting no growth hormone release, and your testosterone is lower than when you started. So you can see how these long-distance runners all end up being emaciated and have nothing but chronic injuries. Of course, I would say that's the rule, not the exception. Whether it's Achilles heel, problems with the tendons, the knees, the hips, the lower back, a lot of this will be minimized when you decrease your running volume and increase the intensity, plus you'll get in better shape. High intensity is anabolic. It actually builds up muscle. It's the only kind of aerobic activity that is truly anabolic, and that is sprinting. The moderate approach, the walking, the 5, 10K, the marathon, absolutely is not anabolic. It is catabolic. And because everyone suffers with sarcopenia, meaning that there's a loss of flesh, lean mass, as we age, we need to maintain an anabolic flux or state. And if you're running a lot and doing no weight training, which is a mistake, then you're going to lose lean mass and bone density, and you're going to collect body fat if you don't control your diet. Triglycerides are released for direct oxidation when you run at a high intensity. There's also a focus on glutamine chemistry. That's why glutamine is so important. When you do run at a higher intensity, there's more risk, certainly. Like with weight training and exercise, if you exercise, there's more risk of damage to your body than not exercising at all. For example, if you do a bench press, there's risk of damage to the shoulders from the bench press if you do it incorrectly than not benching at all. But not training, no exercise at all, leads to a more profound kind of damage in the body as a whole. The whole key here is to exercise correctly and do it with the right motive for the right reason and be rational in your approach. Now, the long distance running gives you the beta endorphin release, and it's excellent for reducing the lethal form, the LDL form of cholesterol, and increasing your healthy or your HDL cholesterol. No doubt, as Mark Smith in his paper recognizes, there are benefits to long-term running. And I love a 5K run myself. I love running even 10K sometimes around a lake, through tunnels, in nature, through parks. There's nothing like it. I feel like a gazelle, a wild animal. But it is catabolic. So you've got to find your balance. There's also an inflammatory response from running. And the longer distance runners are going to experience generally more inflammation with the release of muscle myokines and leukocytes as a consequence of the duration or the time that their body spends under load. And then, of course, there's the foot strike hemolysis. A lot of long-distance runners will lose blood and become iron deficient, and it'll damage or foul up their hematocrit. Their hemoglobin will alter because of the nature of how long they run. So you've got to compensate. You've got to make sure that you're more anabolically inclined. No matter what it is you're doing, that's the rule. Now, weight training for size as opposed to power is contraindicated for long-term or long-distance aerobic exercise. Combining the two is counterproductive. We know that a lot of aerobic activity increases oxidation and elevates cortisol. So it is these two factors that lead to the disintegration and breakdown of muscle mass. I can tell you that meeting Jay Cutler, the Mr. Olympia 2007. That guy does very little cardio, and he does it at a very moderate to slow pace. His focus is size and mere muscle, not health, not cardio conditioning, not fitness. So if you're in it only for mere muscle and you don't give a hoot about health, then screw the cardio. Just pop pills, inject with needles, and hit the weights heavy. But, of course, we are interested in health first. Remember our CHI motto, pursue health and performance will follow. In other words, if you do it right, you'll look great, you'll feel good, but you'll be able to be functional in your 80s and 90s. And believe me, most of us are going to get there, and we're going to regret not doing the work today. Now, a lot of activity with an inadequate intake of protein, which supplies nitrogen, will force your body to catabolize its own muscle tissue for fuel. Remember that all athletes, especially at the higher intensity levels, will burn some protein as a source of fuel. And depending on the type of activity and your metabolic rate, amino acids can contribute 5 to 15% of the fuel burned during exercise. Now, a physician named Dr. Eric Serrano, who's an assistant professor of family practice at the Ohio State College of Medicine in Columbus, says doing more than 30 minutes of cardio a day, three times per week, is an exercise in futility. The combination of strict dieting and excessive cardio can wreak havoc on muscle mass. Dieting, or a state of caloric deficit, in and of itself is catabolic. You then add cardio to an already depleted body, and you literally cannibalize your own muscle tissue to help the body meet its energy needs. The result is a loss of strength and size. So you can see where people get into trouble, and you can see how personal trainers in the gym, by large, are misleading their clients, getting them to do a lot of cardio on a strict diet without any appropriate weight training. When I say appropriate weight training, I do not mean balance board and Swiss ball and cables. I mean hitting the weights and getting into some deadlifting, some power cleans, some squats, some bench press, really getting into the old style, the old school of weight training, which is by far the best for anybody, for health, endurance, strength, size, anything, you name it. Now, burning protein as fuel causes an increase in the excretion of nitrogenous waste because the nitrogen component must be removed. This is called deamination, and water must be consumed in greater quantity, or the kidneys could theoretically suffer or get damaged. If dietary protein is inadequate or the biological value is poor, which leads to poor assimilation and poor deposition of nitrogen in the cell, then your body will have no choice but to use its own structure. This is what we want to avoid, so your intake of high-quality protein must be sufficient for your biological demand. Whether you're weight training with a supplement of cardio or a major runner with a supplement of weight training, you've got to cover your protein needs and supply the biological demand. That's the prime directive at CHI. We don't store amino acids like carbs. Carbohydrates are converted into glycogen and actually stored in the muscle and liver. Fats are channeled into adipocytes, which are the fat cells found in our visceral tissue and under the skin, the subcutaneous fat and the intramuscular fat, creating the marbling effect that you can see in meat. Much of the fat you see in those great big fat bellies on guys or girls, especially down here in America, I'm sorry to say, is stored in the omentum, which hangs like an apron off the stomach. So the stomach, it actually increases, it expands to a limit, and then there's an envelope or an apron that hangs off the front, and this is where a lot of the storage fat goes. And that intramuscular belly fat is the risk of heart disease connection with men especially who don't have the estrogen that women do to protect them. Women also tend and mend, and they talk out their stress with their friends, which is generally what men don't do. So they build stress up, they build up a lot of fat, and bang, they have a major coronary event, typically Monday on the way to a job that they hate. So there are a variety of fuel sources that can be chemically altered and converted into adenosine triphosphate, or ATP, but some are preferable to others, such as carbs and fats. Let's not burn protein. Let's try and burn some clean carbs and excellent living fats. Most of the fat in the body is stored in the form of triglycerides, and to burn fat as an energy source, which is what you've got to do when you're losing body fat, triglycerides are taken out of storage and cleaved into fatty acids and glycerol. Each fatty acid is then broken or split apart and thrown into the mitochondria, where they create heat and produce muscular work. This process is called beta oxidation, and in addition to needing some carbohydrates as a flame, the body also requires plenty of oxygen. ATP is the energy currency of our internal world. As an athlete, you need to understand that if gaining size and strength is your number one priority, then it's impossible to achieve that goal when you are aerobically very active. Therefore, you have to minimize your aerobic activity. To eliminate it completely would be illogical, because from a health point of view, you need to focus on healthy lungs and a healthy respiratory function, and aerobic exercise will help you to achieve these results. Aerobic exercise is also a great cleansing, detoxifying, and sweat kind of workout. There are also certain mental values that you can achieve through aerobics by refreshing your brain, stabilizing circulation, and directly improving the vascular supply to your peripheral exchange systems. Clearly define your goals and correctly emphasize specific areas of your workout routine to ensure overall balance and training productivity. If you want to run and look like Donovan Bailey, or this year's best looking, fastest man or woman in the world, then you've got to train like them. Train like a sprinter, not a long distance runner. And I believe that you'll save your immune system and your bones. You'll have less health problems as a result. And as a consequence, you can also engage in a style of training that is courageous and noble and loaded with integrity. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from Vince Lombardi, head coach of the Green Bay Packers of the NFL from 1959 to 67. Dictionary is the only place that success comes before work. Hard work is the price we must pay for success. I think you can accomplish anything if you're willing to pay the price.